We're with you every Saturday from 10 to 11 a.m. on 1050 KTBL. I'm Jeffrey Candelari with Bank of the West, along with
DJ Heckes with Exhib It.
And thank you again, DJ, for not only being a co-host of ABQ Connect Now, but also for sponsoring ABQ Connect Now. Thank you, DJ.
Thank you, Jeffrey.
The purpose of our show, of course, on ABQ Connect Now Business Radio Program is to host power brokers, decision makers, and entrepreneurs, people who make a difference in our ecosystem called the Albuquerque Economic Development Area. And particularly a good example of that will be Randy Eslin. DJ is going to introduce him. Randy has been a friend of mine for many years, and I'll let you introduce our entrepreneurial guest, Randy Eslin.
Oh, perfect. Let's get started. Well, Randy Eslin, he's a local entrepreneur. Many of you might even remember the Rock Tops food trays. They're the trays that sit on top of the fountain drinks that are located where UNM launched Notre Dame. Is that correct, Randy?
Right, yeah. So we launched them with both UNM and Notre Dame the same weekend.
Well, and you know, I really like how a Rock Tops trays, where you leveraged that technology background and you created Boo Bandu. I'd love to hear more about that, which is like a new mobile solution that you're coming up with.
That's
so
correct.
Welcome, Randy, today. We're really excited to have you and to really learn about how you got started and all your innovation.
Great. Well, thanks for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, Randy, the reason I think we wanted you on is you're an entrepreneur. I mean, we know that we talk about entrepreneurship, all these politicians talk about economic development, all that nonsense. When I met you instantly, what, 4 or 5 years ago?
Mm-hmm.
We connected. I do entrepreneurship in a different way, but you actually do it. You create businesses from vapor. So let's start with some of that and your
sure.
background in true entrepreneurship.
Sure. Okay, great. So my entry into entrepreneurship was in 1995. I was in my early 20s, and really it was all accidental. I was in a public speaking club, and I'd enjoyed public speaking, and a gentleman came up to me and asked me if I would help him with the presentation and speech. And so I spent a couple of weeks with him and his family in his home office helping him with the technology. And at the time, I knew nothing about high tech. And we were doing something on PowerPoint. I didn't even own a computer at the time. And I remember looking over his shoulder and helping him through this presentation. And about the fifth day, he said, you know, you have a real knack for technology. And I thought, well, that's interesting. I don't even own a computer. And he says, yeah, but how do you see things? So I said, I see lines and I see lines and blocks, and I just see movement. He said, that's all technology is. He said, so what I'm doing is I'm speaking at a conference, a wireless conference, in a couple of weeks, and I'm an entrepreneur. I came up with a new wireless fraud solution, and I'm speaking about that industry, and I'm going to slip in this solution, and I think I'm going to get a customer, and if I can get a customer, I'm going to get funding. And if I can make this all work, would you be interested in coming on board? And so sure enough, he went to speak at CTIA. He got a customer out of the audience, and 2 months later, he got $1.5 million in funding, and I was employee number three. I didn't know anything about startups, and he made me his personal assistant. So I learned, I mean, Oz was revealed. I learned how to make things work, how to develop technologies, how to recruit folks, how to get the numbers and budgets put together, how to jump on airplanes, and how to get constituents. And it was like getting a master's degree at 25 years old.
That's
so
interesting.
That's how I got
started.
Our
next guest is going to be the mayor. And I'm going to ask the mayor, you know, 35% of all Albuquerque jobs are reliant on, well, we're going to have the mayor on his point. I'm going to ask him, 35% of all jobs are reliant on city, state, or federal jobs. You're just the reverse of that. You actually take risk and make a business out of it. So talk about what propels you into that space, the risk management space, essentially, as an entrepreneur.
Well, I got to tell you that for me, I don't see it a whole lot like risk. For me, if I have an idea or a thought, I know the process of putting a framework around that thought to determine if there's any validity there. Is there an opportunity to make money? Is there a market for it? Is it unique? Is it something that I can have a unique position with? And if so, I begin that process of work. I start meeting with folks in Albuquerque that I think might have anything to do with the concept that I'm working on.
Right.
So I might meet with folks that are in accounting and finance and technology or a potential customer target. And I want to hear what they have to say. I want to learn from them. And that helps me develop a decision-making process. Do I want to do this? Do I not? Do I think I have an opportunity? And so by the time I get to that point, I don't see it as a risk. I actually see it that if I don't do it, it's risky, right? Like, how can you have this idea or this thought that you know has been ferreted out, that you believe has legs, that nobody else has really established that market yet? And so the greater risk is in knowing you didn't do it. And so I view risk very differently. You know, so to me, it's almost like a calling when that idea hits you, and you have to take it to its end.
Well, let me put it another way. Where does your industriousness come from then?
Oh, I think just growing up here in Albuquerque and growing up in the South Valley, you know, the reality is that the folks in the Valley, and certainly my parents, grandparents, are very industrious. They're very practical and resourceful. So at an early age, I learned to use the things around me to accomplish the things I needed to accomplish, in even the most meager and meek ways. And I think that if you develop those things in small, then that extrapolates to doing larger things later in life. And so really, it's probably my upbringing and knowing that I was going to have to work hard most of my life for the things that I wanted to enjoy.
Our guest is Randy Aslan, and he's owned many businesses that he created from scratch, and he's very successful. DJ, you have some background on Randy. You want to talk about some of that?
Yeah, I'm really intrigued about your startup, and that person almost was a mentor to you, wasn't it?
Yeah, he was, absolutely.
And, you know, what words of wisdom can you give? Because I really like your idea, concept of, you know, start with the means, you know, use the items around you. What words of wisdom can you give someone that really has an idea out there, but they don't know how to get started? What would you say to them right now if you were sitting across the table?
Well, I think the most difficult part is how do you get started, because there's so many areas. You know, what's it going to be made out of? Is it software or is it a hard good? Is it something that I would sell myself or is it something that someone else would sell for me? So you actually have to think about how things get on the store shelves or how people buy things. Once you start understanding that for your product, it actually begins to create a pathway for you to start determining what research you have to do. So, for example, if it's a hard good, if you want to invent something, okay, I would go to Hobby Lobby and I would go to Home Depot and I would get raw materials there and I would use paper and cardboard and cardstock and plastic and metal. I would not create something in its end form. I want to know if it makes sense and if it's going to work. Okay, that's before even looking at patents and if anything's done anything with it before. And then once I have a good idea about it and start understanding it, then I might start talking to people who would make something like this. I might go to Bob Walton at AED, who specializes in manufacturing. And Bob was a great help to me early on in Rock Tops. When I first got to Albuquerque, I met with Bob, and he helped me understand the thermoforming process, and he helped me understand the plastics industry better. So that really took a load off of me. That was great help that was there, available, and it was free. And so that's how I would start. Then I would start looking at whether I could patent it. Does it make sense to patent it? Do I need to patent it? There are millions of products out there that have never been patented. In fact, over 97% of all patents that exist have never made a dollar for the inventor. So really, you have to look at whether there's a market and you want to do anything with this. Forget the patents. That will come later.
So you actually lived in Tucson, as I recall, too, right?
I did.
Right?
That's correct.
So Tucson and Albuquerque are relatively similar in population. There are some variants, of course, but overall very similar. Would you say the entrepreneurial culture is similar or different Tucson, Albuquerque, given that they're very similar cities? Of course, you were there years ago, but would you say there's a similarity there, a cultural variant between Albuquerque, Tucson? How would you see that?
Well, I do in a couple of different ways. That's an interesting question, actually, on a number of levels. So Albuquerque and Tucson are similar in terms of the population base. Geographically, they look the same. Obviously, desert cities, okay? But what's interesting is in 1997 through 2000, Tucson went through this entrepreneurial resurgence that I am seeing right here in Albuquerque now. We probably had 21 venture capital companies in Tucson. We had the city and the state all trying to make Arizona Silicon Valley, too. And so we had, you know, talk about startup weekends and having coffee clutches and having entrepreneur time and venture capital time, and there were incubators popping up all over Tucson. I was very involved in that space at the time, and now I see that that's happening in Albuquerque now. And so to me, it is almost a mirror image or a parallel in terms of what I experienced in Tucson back then. And I think it's a very interesting time for Albuquerque, right? Because there's a lot of investment. You have Fat Pipe and West, and you've got the Epicenter, and you've got ABQID. A lot of similarities I see right now.
So why do you think Tucson was that much progressive above Albuquerque when we're just now getting into that realm?
Well, I think because Tucson and Phoenix and their proximity to California and technology made it so that when Silicon Valley was popping, if you remember 1998 through 2000, that's right before the dot bomb bust, right?
Yep.
So technology was everywhere. And so Phoenix and Tucson were adjacent to it. So it made sense that there were resources and people in Tucson trying to capitalize on that. So that whole dot bomb thing imploded. And now we are several years out. And now we have kind of a new direction. And I don't think Albuquerque at the time was really a technological hub. However, since 2004 and the movie industry and all the things happening here, it really drove and forced a certain element of technology here, which I see today, which I think is fantastic.
Will what you saw in Tucson, is that a good, will that portend into what you think Albuquerque will eventually emerge as an entrepreneurial culture? In other words, did those things that were invested in Tucson 15 years ago manifest into true entrepreneurship in Tucson, or was it just a bunch of spaghetti on the wall stuff?
Well, look, I don't want to call it spaghetti on the wall, but there is something that I see that happened in Tucson that I do have, you know, eyes for here, and maybe a little bit of concern. So in that time in Tucson, there were a ton of startup companies with all sorts of technologies, okay? As far as I can tell, and I was there for many years, none of those companies actually made it out of the chute and became successful. While I was in Tucson, one company did become successful. They got acquired, but it was a company kind of doing things on their own. They weren't even involved in all of that local community. They were a couple of brothers that put together a broadcast faxing company, and they just went and got their customers, built it on their own. They weren't really involved in all of that activity, and they actually made it. But I didn't see a lot of folks make it out of that startup community, and I do see maybe some similarities with Albuquerque. Here's why. It's one thing to provide an ecosystem for people to have ideas and to start developing them and learning how to do a business plan and how VCs think and exactly what you need to do to get there from here. But the real work happens after somebody identifies an opportunity. So now you know you have an opportunity and you have a shot. What you need now is staying power. Okay? That's money. You need an investment class that's willing to say, we're going to write checks and give these companies a shot. Okay, I'm not talking about 50,000. I'm not talking about 150,000. Okay, the reality is when you have no money and you're resourceful, you can move within that space. The minute you get a little bit of money, 50,000, 150,000, all that really does is prepare you to need a lot more money, right? That doesn't give you 2 to 3 years worth of life. That doesn't give you a whole group of employees. That gives you enough to get to the next level. And it's at that level that when I look around, you know, I think that Albuquerque really has to focus on developing an investment class that will focus on those companies that now need between 750 and 5 million. Now they need staying power. They need to get customers. They need to be on airplanes. They need to be at trade shows. They need to recruit. They need press releases. They need some advertising. They need early adopters. That costs money. And without the staying power, some of the best ideas will die. No one will ever see them.
Well, especially because, you know, the first 2 years was so critical in that startup ramp up, build up, and growth and sustainability. Now, I remember I heard just maybe a month ago Gary Opendahl talking about the city is investing. They just got some new monies, and I know we had a guest speaker on a couple Saturdays ago, also from AED. It might have even been last Saturday. And they were talking about, I think the city's finally realizing that importance of, yes, it's a great idea, but you've got to take it to fruition.
Well, it's true. And I don't know about how much the city's investing or the state. And I think that's absolutely wonderful because I think that's a good catalyst. It's a starting point. But the reality is that this is also a private sector play, right? Because cities and counties and states aren't built for risk. They're not built to risk the tax base. So this is wonderful, actually, that Gary stepped up and so many folks in the community to get some seed money out there. But really, we need to focus on what's after the seed, right? Because let's say you're an investor. So DJ or Jeffrey, I come to you, and let's say you don't live in Albuquerque. Let's say you guys are in Southern California, and you love my idea and my concept, and you have the money to invest. So let's say you write me a check for $2.5 million, okay? And now you have seats on my board, and you guys are very critical, and you're somewhat influential in the business at this point. Okay. Now, you have the same economic development pressures in Southern California that our folks have here. So if you were my heavy investors and I did not get the money out of New Mexico, what are the chances of me being able to stay here and have employees here and build? At what point do you ask me to move to Los Angeles or to move to Silicon Valley? If we want to develop economically here, we need to keep entrepreneurs here. We need to invest locally so that we don't have other owners or people of influence moving those companies out. And that's a very critical link, I believe, to long-term economic development.
Yeah, that doesn't get talked about enough. Our guest is Randy Aslan. He's an entrepreneur. He's owned several businesses, continues to own several businesses. We're going to talk about Boobandu here in a minute. So getting back to that, is that an equity investor versus a venture capitalist, somebody who actually has now equity in your company because I'm actually putting $2.5 million out of my pocket into your company? Now it's partly my company?
Sure, it absolutely can be. I mean, whoever makes the investment, whether it's equity or debt, has a certain level of control most of the time, especially in the earlier days. And so, you know, there's several instruments or equity instruments where you sell a portion of your company and now you have got other owners. And then there are notes, right, that are convertible where somebody gives you a loan for a period of time and that can be converted to stock. And then you've got certainly you have debt financing. But at the end of the day, startups really need a certain level of equity investment where you don't have banks coming after you. You don't have people coming after you to pay that note, where really you have investors that have skin in the game and want to help you succeed.
You know, Randy, the reason we're excited to have you on the show, I think it's very confusing for lots of folks that are listening when you have ABQID, New Mexico Angels, venture capitalists, equity investment, you know, incubators, startup business. I mean, all this parlance, what does it mean? Do we do a good job? Should we have some class at APS when you're a senior that talks about entrepreneurship and all that it entails, because it's very confusing. Would you agree?
Well,
unless
you're
in the space.
No, I'm gonna put it a bit differently. First of all, I think Albuquerque's killing it. I think they're doing a great job. When I look at all of the incubation, Albuquerque's doing a phenomenal job of becoming an epicenter, if you will, of innovation, high tech, and opportunity. I don't think we're failing at all there, okay? My only concerns, obviously, would be as an entrepreneur, what about the sustainability you need once you graduate from those programs or once you've identified an opportunity? That's really what I'm talking toward.
Now, let me phrase it. But there
are other things. For example, Junior Achievement of New Mexico. Okay, junior achievement focuses on financial literacy at the youngest ages, elementary school, then middle school, then high school. They have an entire entrepreneurship program. I mean, I'm on the board of Junior Achievement, very proud of that. We go into the classrooms. We meet with those students. We bring them into our companies and businesses for the day. We teach them about job interviews. We teach them about entrepreneurship. So I think that we have pathways in New Mexico. I think this is a classic problem that every city and state has. Once you got folks that are talented and are proving out what they have, how do we keep them here? And I think, you know, at some point, we in New Mexico have to make the decision that we're going to find a way to fund, become early adopters for these technologies and use these technologies, help these entrepreneurs prove out what they have. Those are the kinds of things we can do here.
Well, I respectfully disagree. You're in the space. You live and breathe entrepreneurship, but I'm not in that space. Yet I'm in banking, and I think it's very confusing to the average person that's a business person that's thinking about starting a business. When you hear about Verge, ABQID, Fat Pipe, entrepreneurship, New Mexico Angels, equity investment, VC investment, I don't think the average person understands what all that means. I'm not saying that's a good or bad thing necessarily. I'm just saying I wish we could do a better job. I think that's what this radio show tries to do, is give folks more of an insight as to all these different resources and all these different aspects that comprise what the entrepreneurship machine kind of looks like today in a marketplace like Albuquerque.
And I think most entrepreneurs do their due diligence first, you know, because entrepreneurs are risk takers. And I know I'm a risk taker, and I did the same thing when I opened my business. You know, you have that idea, you write it on paper, you make your action plan, and you just make it happen, and you don't look back.
Mm-hmm.
Failure is the things you pick up along the way. There is no, you know, failure permanently.
I guess I'm not making myself clear. What I'm saying is there are resources in Albuquerque. I don't know that the average person who's not in that space understands what those resources are. West, Fat Pipe, ABQID, all these other resources, and what those resources can mean to support my idea if I'm thinking about opening a business.
Yeah.
That's what I'm suggesting.
Well, you know what you find, though, I think, is when you become interested in something, that's when you learn how many resources are around you, right? If you're not into hiking, you have no idea we have some of the best hiking in the United States here. If you're not into snowboarding, you have no idea that we have great snowboarding on Sandia when we get great snow, right? So if you're not into that space, you'd have no reason to discover it. The minute you have an idea here, and you're interested, whether you're a male or female, doesn't matter your education level. Once you make the first phone call or do Startup Albuquerque as a Google search, everything really does pour in. The city's done a really good job of making sure that if you seek, you're going to be able to find it here. And so I think it's just a matter of where your interest lies and when you decide to take that first step and commit to learning how to get there from here or taking your idea and doing something with it. There are so many resources that gather around, and most of them are connected. You see a lot of the same people at all these events, and that's a good thing, right? I mean, that shows a level of commitment and momentum and integration that really does good things for the community.
Yeah, but I'd like to see more inspiring entrepreneurship, not the folks predisposed to it, who have a proclivity for it, but maybe a class in all that all seniors should take throughout the state that says, you should probably take a class on business and entrepreneurship, whether it's going to be part of your predisposition or not, fine. But it might inspire more to wean off our contingency on state, federal bureaucratic jobs, because we're one of the highest states that has that contingency on state, federal, whatever, job base. And I don't know that that's necessarily conducive to entrepreneur-oriented thinking. That's all.
Well, I think you know, what you say makes a good point, right? Because I think when an eighth grader knows how that Nike shirt got on their back, from the time someone came up with it to they had to get it printed, they had to source the material, they had to figure out whether they're doing it here or overseas, regardless of your feelings about all of those things, that's the process. And I think that once Oz is revealed, right, if you're resourceful, you are all in, because you know that you're no different than the next person who took an idea and ran with it. Then the real test is the test of self. Are you willing to pay the price for the opportunity? And really, for everybody, that's where the rubber meets the road. It's all nice and easy when you've got a great idea and you're telling all your friends and you're high-fiving, you're having coffee over it, and you have your first meetings and everyone's encouraging you. It's difficult when you need to find funds and money and people and resources, and you have long days and you don't have a lot of like-minded people, right? There aren't a lot of entrepreneurs. There's not like an entrepreneurial coffee shop. And so you find yourself living that life alone most of the time, right? Okay, that's where the rubber meets the road. And I think that's what most people aren't prepared for. You got to really pay the price for those things that you want. And it's still only an opportunity you get. It's a great thing, but
I appreciate what you're saying. But again, it's like I think about shortstops and left fielders in baseball. Mm. There are more Cubans and Puerto Ricans playing that position than any other ethnicity in the world other than U.S. citizens. Mm. And Cuba and Puerto Rico, last I checked, are very small, whatever, because they, for whatever reason, made a commitment to baseball in Cuba and Puerto Rico, and now you've got this disproportionate number of left fielders and shortstops making zillions of dollars. Not that it's all about money, but it's called commitment. Our guest, Randy Eslin, he is an entrepreneur and a business owner in the Albuquerque marketplace, and this guy knows entrepreneurship. So that brings me back to Rock Tops. You studied, and I know a little bit about it because I think I helped you a little bit with that, but you actually studied behavior and the physics of the way people eat food, and by doing so, you found an opportunity. So why don't you chat about that?
No, it's really true. Rock Tops was about a concept in which I saw the top of the fountain drinking cup was a mobile table nobody was using. And so I thought, that's weird. You know, you've got all these automobiles with cup holders that Ford spent millions of dollars to figure out where to put. You've got people in stadiums and movie theaters. And so I thought I was going to be in the ketchup business. I thought I was going to be in the condiment dipping business, and I realized that there was no money in it for restaurants. There's no money in something you give away like condiments. But if I could increase revenue per transaction, that changes everything. If I could have you walk away from a concession stand with 2 to 3 extra food items because we leverage the top of the fountain drinking cup and have a tray up there, that changes the economic dynamics for everybody, and it allows you to carry more back to your seat and to satisfy everybody. And so you're right. It was a lot of work. How do you take nachos, a slice of pizza, 2 hot dogs, a pretzel and a hot dog, and balance it on a Coke, on a soda, sorry, not Coke, but on a soda, fountain drink, and no matter how you turn your hand, it doesn't fall off. No matter when you pick up the food, right, everything stays balanced and you eat. You put the food back, and when you're done, you throw the tray away, and you still have your cup lid in the straw. And so it was a lot of work, and we had a great deal of fun putting that together.
Yeah, so Rock Tops essentially is a tray on a soda, so now you have the ability to have 2 Cokes, 2 orders of nachos, and now you just made a bigger purchase than otherwise. That's why the interest is on
correct.
Because it's not about the damn trade.
That's
it's about more volume of per point purchase.
So when we tested at UNM, okay, before Rock Tops, and we put menus up and you can order by number, okay, the average sale at UNM was $6.25 a transaction. During our testing period, it went up to $15.84 per transaction. More than double, okay, because folks can carry more away. And so, it was an excellent product, excellent testing, and so very proud of that experience.
Right. So let's talk about Boo Bandoo, because we have a few minutes left.
Sure.
But that's one of your latest endeavors.
Yes. Okay, great. So Boo Bandoo solves a lot of problems in the mobile space. Everybody's tired of mobile. There's a lot of noise, and we see that as well. But we thought to ourselves, you know, nobody is hitting engagement in mobile. Everyone talks about being engaging, and nobody wants their app deleted. You know, if you're a company, you don't want anyone to delete your app. And we thought, well, how can we resolve all of that? How can we focus on engagement? So the first thing we did was we created an app platform in which a company can build their own app, manage their own app, a very high-end app too, we're talking about a Google Play or an Apple iTunes app, okay, that that doesn't require developers. You don't need to interface with the developer. You don't need to know anybody in development, whether it's Android or Apple. We do that as turnkey. Then we give you a platform that you log into, and we show you how to build and manage your own app, and we can do it in less than a day. Okay, and it's phenomenal. Dippin' Dots has been testing with us over the last year. We launched with Dippin' Dots nationwide. And so, first of all, it was the ability to have an amazing app without needing a development team. The second thing was then how can we create engagement? How can we really lock users in? And so we created several tools that do that. One is Look and See technology. When you have an app from BooBandoo, it can take over the camera on your phone and we can make it recognize different things about your brand, your cups, your napkins, your logo, a poster, anything. We can make it recognize and bring additional content in real time. That becomes interesting because what if you want content in Spanish or in Mandarin or in German? What if you want to be able to give somebody a language option? How would you like to read this in German? Tap on German and boom, we send that to your phone, that app content in German. Okay, nobody can do that today. We figured that out. And then we added other things like loyalty programming, the ability to give loyalty points for anything anybody does in the app. Watch this video, we'll give you 50 points. Go ahead and purchase this, we'll give you 200 points. Okay, come to our trade show booth, we're going to give you 5,000 points. Then we built a platform to let consumers redeem those points for prizes.
So if I have a Dairy Queen and I want to expand into Sumatra, with your technology, I scan my Dairy Queen logo and some Sumatra gal starts talking about the virtue of Brazier burgers in her own indigenous language.
Well, and that's only scratching the surface. So yes, we can bring content in immediately in real time in any language, but we can also do things like augmented reality. We can take a menu or a cup and turn it into something else right there on the mobile device. So an example would be you're trying to set up a router at home. You have no internet. You're setting up your router. What if you could just open up your phone and take a look at the box, and then the phone tells you exactly how to set up your router and put it all together, and you had no internet to begin with? That use of augmented reality is a touch point and it's engaging. And so we create mobile games. And so our goal is to keep users engaged with that company. That's where we focus.
And that same idea scenario with the Sumatra Brazier burger, you can create loyalty to that as well.
Absolutely. We could give you 50 points for looking at the Sumatran ad. All right.
So Randy, if people want to know more about this app, how can they read about it?
Well,
or contact you.
Sure. Well, they can go to www.boobandoo.com, B-U-B-A-N-D-U, B-A-B-A-N-D-U.com, or they can certainly get a hold of me if they just, you know, Google my name or Rocktops, R-O-C-K-T-O-P-S. You're going to find me all over the place.
It's been a pleasure. Wow, that's great information.
Yeah,
so
it's been fun.
Let's talk about some of our live events coming up, DJ.
Yeah, Jeffrey, our next event, ABQ Connect Now live event, is Thursday, February 25th. It's going to be in the morning instead of in the evening. It'll be at Bravo Italiano Restaurant at ABQ Uptown. That's 8:30 to 10. You can call 604-9081. Also, don't forget that Best Local Brand Contest ends on February 26th. If you've got a great brand and you want to win some great prizes, over $4,000 in media and other things, make sure you go to exhib-it.com/B2B. That's exhib-it.com/B2B.
So we've got about 20 seconds. Any concluding thoughts, Randy?
Yeah, just, hey, if there's something that's driving you, go for it. Go for it. Put the time, the effort. You're worth it. Your history is worth it. Everything that you are brought you to this point. So take advantage of it and give it a shot and have fun with it. Take some risk.
And I think you teach us to continue to have a curious mind. Ask questions. Don't make assumptions. Thank you again for tuning into ABQ Connect Now. We'll be with you after these short messages.
Did you know that only 50% of your marketing dollars actually work? That's right, just 50%. Which 50% is working for you? Are you tired of wasting money and not reaching the right target audience through your marketing dollars? Exhibit can help you get noticed through design and print of corporate branding, marketing one-sheets, brochures, and trade show displays. Marketing has changed, and the way to reach your target audience is changing. If you want to grow your business and work with a reputable and well-known company, be sure to call now and talk with one of our marketing and Exhibit experts, 828-0574. That's 828-0574. or visit us on the web at exhib-it.com. Again, exhib-it.com. Exhibit, it's New Mexico's leading provider of marketing, design, and printing, and portable, modular, and custom trade show displays. Proud sponsor and co-host of KTBL 1050 AM ABQ Connect Now Business Talk Radio Show on Saturdays from 10 to 11 a.m.
Welcome back, Albuquerque. Welcome back to ABQ Connect Now. We're a business radio program. We're with you every Saturday from 10 to 11 a.m. on 1050 KTBL. I'm Jeffrey Candelaria with Bank of the West, along with
DJ Heckes with Exhib It.
The purpose of ABQ Connect Now is to host power brokers, entrepreneurs, people of influence who really do positively influence our ecosystem, particularly the economic piece. Our first guest on the second segment is
Ariane Gonzalez. She's actually the president of Cervantes Food Products, which is a Hispanic woman, family-owned, multi-generational specialty food manufacturing business. And welcome, Ariane, today. It's really exciting to see, you know, all the history, and I can't wait to delve in to hear all of your innovation that you guys have done over the years and great products.
Oh, well, thank you. Thank you for having me.
So, Ariane, I've been to your restaurant many times, San Pedro and Gibson, right by Holy Ghost High School, if I recall. And one of the things that makes New Mexico, New Mexico, of course, is red and green chili, particularly for me, red, because it's always a little bit more of a craft, in my view, to make and blend red chili. So talk a little bit about some of the, without revealing too many of your secrets, what makes red chili and Cervantes so unique?
Well, you know, for us, red chili is the heart and soul of our business. A green chili is the spirit of our business, but the heart and soul is definitely our red chili sauce. And the reason for that is because we do it, albeit we're a specialty food manufacturing, and people start to think and envision that we do it by big batches. We don't. We still handcraft our red chili products. We only use New Mexico sun-dried red chilies, and there is a difference between sun-dried and mechanically dried red chili pods. We clean every pod by hand. I mean, it's a very labor-intensive product, but that's what makes it's so good, is that it's as though your mom or grandmother might be making it in their own kitchens.
And again, what makes, because, you know, we grew up on red chili, and I mean, I feel like it's just been part of my, you know, my palate since I was an infant. And literally, you cannot get the same feel, even if it's not Cervantes. You know, there are other very good New Mexico restaurants too, but when you go to Colorado, Texas, whatever, it's just different. Do you have any sense as to why it's so unique to New Mexico, the red chili sauce that we all know and love?
Well, I think a lot of it has to do with growing conditions. New Mexico has been well-known, renowned for our chilies, be it green or red. Red chili, the reason we use the sun-dried red chili is because it's allowed to mature on the plant naturally, where as opposed to a mechanically dried item, which they pick a little younger, a little earlier stage, and then put it through big drying mechanisms, be it ovens or whatever it is they're using. But more than anything, I think it's our culture. It's our temperament. It's our ranchers, our farmers. They know how to grow green and red chili. Granted, there's a big debate whether or not Colorado is the king of green. No, they're not. It's definitely New Mexico. It's part of our heritage. We've been doing it as a state for so many years. It's, as you said, it's in our blood.
Yeah, but it's almost astounding when you go anywhere else, guess, for red chili outside New Mexico, it just doesn't taste it. And that's probably the preparation process, right, that we've cultivated for hundreds of years,
right,
that we're just used to here with a little garlic, you boil it and on.
Right,
on.
And the blending all of the other things, all the other pieces that go along with it.
Yeah.
You're right.
Maybe it's akin to Bourbon, Kentucky being the king of producing that kind of oak, you know, oak barrel kind of tasting smoky whiskey, and literally Dom Perignon, which is an area in France, that is where you get champagne.
Right.
And so maybe it's akin to some of that.
Absolutely. And like I said, it's so steeped in our heritage, it's difficult to, you know, to not think of New Mexico and not think of red and green chili.
Well, I'm a curious guy. I have a curious mind. I watch some of the food shows, not because I'm a cook, because I can't even make microwave popcorn, but I watch them because it's essentially chemistry, and I love chemistry. I have a minor in chemistry, so I watch food shows because it's chemistry. What I'm getting at, though, is the national shows, you see a lot more New Mexico products, particularly the chili products, which is telling me that we're becoming, you know, pretty well known as far as culinary delight all over the world.
Absolutely. We've seen this trending now for the last, I would say, 5 years, more aggressively in the last 3 years, where we're seeing culinary artists, if you will, celebrity chefs who want to incorporate that little bit of a New Mexico flair. They are tending to use green chili more than the red chili, but I think as soon as they catch on to the yumminess, if you will, of red chili, they'll start to incorporate it. Red chili tends to be, at least with our company, it's also the hotter of the two products. And so for individuals who are not accustomed to eating really spicy foods, other parts of the country may not be so in tune with the spicy.
Yeah, but shame on America, because
exactly.
We eat Indian food and we eat all that damn gumbo stuff from, no offense, Louisiana. That's damn spicy, too.
It can
so
be
shame
spicy.
On America for not appreciating red and green chili from New Mexico.
And it's about education, too. A lot of individuals who don't have either a direct tie to New Mexico, haven't traveled to New Mexico, or vacationed, or visited friends and family, don't really know the culinary sauces that we work with every day of the week. It's just sort of an afterthought.
Our guest is Ariane Gonzalez. She's been a friend for years, and she is the president of Cervantes Food Products Incorporated.
You know, and Ariane, we go way back, women-owned businesses and many boards together and all that. I see that you started in 1998. You had, like, recipes, like your original three products.
Correct.
Now you're up to 16, less than 20 years later.
Right.
Right?
And, you know, that may seem a little slow-paced for some companies, but it's right on point for our business. The reason being is that we want to capture the traditional authentic flavors of New Mexico. And to make a shelf-stable product or even a refrigerated item, it's difficult to capture that and not at such a quick pace and not become sort of mass-marketed, mass-produced. And so we have purposely, as a business, taken the approach where we develop, we figure out what we want to do at the beginning of the year, and we purposely develop them at a slower pace.
Well, and I think that's smart, because you guys have made such a great name for yourself. Cervantes products, the 16 that you have, are truly locally flavored. You know, you guys really go in and you take the land of enchantment in your flavors, and you put a lot of thought process behind it instead of just turn and burn to make money.
Right. Well, one of the things that we really work and focus very strongly on is the idea of preparing traditional authentic flavors, but without animal fats, without higher sodium content. We are definitely wanting to produce an ethnic specialty food line that is health for the health conscious people that enjoy that, because there's so many labels about New Mexican cuisine being overly fatty or overly salty. This is an opportunity for people to use our products in their home and still be able to maintain their health conscious.
And the name Cervantes, is that the famous Spanish author with Don Quixote,
yes,
fighting windmills.
Miguel de Cervantes,
okay.
Yes.
Any history behind why that particular construct was selected as a name for your brand, Cervantes?
Well, you know, anytime you go into business, it's a form of tilting, you know, and windmills, and
yeah.
So
got to be a little crazy to open
a
business, right?
You have to be a little crazy to have a business, much less a woman-owned family business. But Cervantes was actually a family name that we adopted when we created our second business, which is the Cervantes Food Products business. And so, but I've always kind of had this relationship, albeit it's my own relationship, with the main character of Don Quixote. I mean, you do have to be just a little bit of a risk taker and just this side of not
but
being crazy.
But to that point, he was also an idealist, and an
absolutely.
Idealist for good. He always saw the higher standards for whatever he saw, even though he was warped.
Right.
His warpness was actually skewing toward the higher ideals that life could be, including seeing beauty in his girlfriend, Dulcinea.
Dulcinea.
Exactly, who was basically a peasant. Anyway, we're going on a tangent. So let's talk about chili.
Okay.
New Mexico chili. You can't get it in Texas. You can't get it anywhere else. Isn't it so that some guy in New Mexico State 1925. So talk about the history of that, the chili pod, the different varieties of chili that we know, because it can be very complicated, and you probably have some insight into that.
Right. And there are so many varieties of chili, from mild to wild is basically how I view it. My company specifically contracts with growers, and we use a very specific type of chili. You know, when people say, is this Hatch chili? There's no such thing as a type of pepper called Hatch chili. It's a region from which it's grown. It's an area of New Mexico. But, yes, we do get many of our chilies from the Hatch Valley area. We also get it a little closer in. We get it as close as Los Lunas. But we have very specific specifications that we require in terms of the type of chili that needs to be grown for us, how it looks, how it feels when you're working with it, so forth and so on.
Our guest is Adrian Gonzalez with Cervantes. So getting back to that, it's kind of akin to the Pinot Noir grape and the this and that. I mean, there's a lot of variations of grapes. So getting back to our chili pod, talk about it. There's the guy, I can't remember, it was a Chinese guy in 1920, actually hybrided a pod and made the jumbo chili and all that. So do you have any,
well, you
any
know,
thoughts
the
on some of that?
The history goes way back. You're right. And New Mexico State is absolutely, I would say, the birthplace of all of what we know, I'm sure, as being able to categorize certain chilies. And they have, I believe, a tremendous organization that's not directly affiliated, if I'm not mistaken, the Chili Institute, that also has and provides a lot of history about the chili. But yes, New Mexico State was integral in, if you will, categorizing, figuring out the different types of varieties of chili. The Big Jim, you've got Sandia, you have Lumbre, you have, I mean, and I'm just touching the surface. There are so many.
Well, that's what I'm trying to get at. It's not
types.
As simple as generically,
no.
If you're in Providence, Rhode Island, saying, I want a red chili.
No.
I mean, there's so many variations
right.
of that. And that's what I think is so interesting
right.
and probably is what makes New Mexico chili so unique.
Well, and there are volumes. There are so many books in the marketplace that talk specifically about New Mexico chili and how it came about. And, you know, granted, it was centuries before, generations before the folks at New Mexico State did what they did when chili came
into
New Mexico.
Well, like Dom Perignon, the monk, he wanted to have a way to keep wine longer,
right.
So he introduced effervescence.
Mm.
It became sparkling champagne,
mm-hmm.
and it's from the Champagne region
right.
in Paris, or not Paris, France, and it's actually, there was this guy, monk guy, who was a scientist, or a mad scientist, who made Dom Perignon sparkling wine.
Right.
Kind of like here in New Mexico, some guy inventing the Big Jim and all these varietals of
exactly.
of chili.
You know, and one of the things that I've worked on in the past, along with my husband and a different organization, was the idea of it making it against the law to produce or to sell a product as a New Mexico chili product when, in fact, the chilies are being brought in from other countries or other mm-hmm. states. And so that went through. The law was passed. And I think it really has strengthened our brand as New Mexico as far as our chilies are concerned.
Yeah, like Kentucky bourbon.
Should
be from that region of Kentucky. Thank you again for being a guest, DJ.
Adrian, also, you guys are selling outside the state of New Mexico. Let's talk about how you got a lot of your products in some of the bigger stores.
Well, you know, it's an ongoing effort, and albeit that we're very heavily concentrated in New Mexico and in the Southwest, it's an ongoing effort in order to continue to grow our business. We look at it more from a regional standpoint. Your point, Jeffrey, about now people are becoming more aware of what a New Mexico chili is. They're reading it in food magazines. They're seeing it on the Food Network. They're following celebrity chefs who enjoy incorporating that flair of New Mexico. All of these things are now, we're starting to get interest from all over the United States. In fact, beyond selling it outside in retail, I have a very, very strong performing website. That if they cannot get it in, let's say, Washington State or in Washington, D.C., for that matter, then they jump online at CervantesSalsa.com and we ship it to them.
You know, that reminds mm-hmm. me of that guy, Nacho, 1973. Here's some interesting trivia. Really, it's not trivia, it's business. So he ran out of Frito Pies, Arlington Stadium, baseball. So he put cheese on some frickin' Fritos, made nachos. His name was Nacho. Mm-hmm. Hot Eating Nachos became a ubiquitous product in our country because he ran out of chili on his Frito Pies, 1973 Arlington Stadium. Isn't that interesting?
That's very interesting.
So it's akin to why. And then salsa, too. Hasn't it become one of the number one condiments overtaking ketchup, about
absolutely.
15 years ago?
Yeah. And salsa, there are so many varieties and flavors and combinations and of salsas, you know. And that's why we've really, granted, we do a salsa, and it's a very popular salsa, our jalapeno salsa, our green chili salsa. But our really, our cornerstone products are our red and green chili sauce. So I get that all the time. Oh, my gosh, you have the best red chili. And I have even had competitors tell me, you're the best red chili in the marketplace.
And we're also starting to see how chili can be a part of other items than just corn tortillas and tacos and other things. I think that's another good thing for folks in your space, right?
Absolutely.
Is that we're seeing that chili can be used for lots of other accompaniments as far as cuisine is concerned, right? An entree.
Absolutely. And one of the things that I encourage our customers to do is to drop me a line on our website. There's a contact page, of course, and to let me know how they're using it that's so different than what the traditional, what we typically think of with red chili, either as a sauce for burritos or tamales or enchiladas. How else are you incorporating it? I have a lady, and this is a funny story. She came up to me and she said, I have to tell you, I have your chili in my oatmeal in the morning. And I thought, whoa, okay, that's stretching it a little bit. But she says, you know, I don't care for sweet oatmeal, but I know the value of eating oatmeal. So similar to a friend of mine who's from the South that incorporates it in their grits, she yep. does it with their oatmeal.
Thanks for tuning in to ABQ Connect Now. I'm Jeffrey Candelaria, along with
DJ Heckes,
our guest Adrian Gonzalez with Cervantes Food Products Incorporated. Of course, New Mexico is known for red chili on mashed potatoes. My wife, she's a Jew from Washington. She almost blew her mind when I put red chili on mashed potatoes. Now she loves it. I also put red chili on meatloaf. She is a big fan now. At first,
yes.
didn't understand it. So instead of, you know, washing it down with all that tomato sauce, I put red chili on a meatloaf, and it's fantastic.
And Italian food. Mm-hmm. Italian food and Mexican food almost can go hand in hand. And there's some crossover in terms of ingredients. If you incorporate red chili into a spaghetti sauce, a traditional marinara sauce, now I'm sure Italians are freaking out right now and saying, how would you ever and why would you do that to our to their culinary?
Because we can.
Because we can. But it's very tasty. It's just a little twist. And, you know, my thoughts are be creative as guests, you know, as chefs in your own home or if you're cooking for parties, be creative. Think of outside the box of what you can do with chili.
You know, talking about thinking outside the box, Adrian, you really are a grassroots marketer. I'd like you to share with our audience, you know, what you've done because your customers are your brand ambassadors. When you hear Cervantes, customers are out there selling for you the idea, the concept, the company. Talk about how you established that brand.
Well, and it's all about relationships. We do a lot of in-store sampling as well as a lot of what are called road shows at Costco. And I do those. I perform those along with handpicked people from our organization who have a relationship with our customers. They love saying, you guys make this red chili? Oh, my gosh. This is exactly how my mother used to make it, or this is how my grandmother used to make it. So there, you're already establishing an emotional connection with your customer. That emotional connection now transfers to their friends, their family members, and it becomes a bit of a networking all on its own. And I love that. To me, you cannot put a price on that type of marketing. Our customers are, as you mentioned, brand ambassadors, and they just talk about it like crazy, like wildfire.
Yeah, so a couple of years ago when my wife brought her friends from Washington, I said, we went to your restaurant, and I'm not just saying that because you're here, but we did because it's the ambiance, it's an organic feel, it's Albuquerque, the food, and they all in their own way, love different aspects of what they all ordered, you know, because, again, green chili to someone from Washington State, I mean, that's, you know, they're used to that Ortega vinegar chili nonsense.
Right.
So it really is, once folks begin to appreciate what it's about,
right,
it's such a unique experience that folks want to be part of their cuisine, you know, on occasion. So mm-hmm. it's to your very point.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, and Adian, you know, I have to share a Southern story because I just got back from North Carolina a couple of weeks ago. My son-in-law, he claims you can't make Mexican food hot enough for me. So I'll put in the mild in the beginning over the years and the medium. Well, now I take the green chili salsa that you make, the hot red chili. I add jalapenos, more jalapenos to the green chili.
Jalapenos,
I mean the green.
What the
seriously. And now he finally, and I put some hot Tabasco sauce even, trying to like saying, hey, this is not too hot. But yet he went back to your original, the hot flavors. So even a gringo in North Carolina knows that you have the hottest.
There
it's
you
awesome.
Go. I love it.
Well, you need to give him some extra hot red chili because we make extra hot as well. So
I like
that will make him.
Yeah.
That'll make him think a little bit.
That's called capsaicin.
Capsaicin. Uh-huh.
But we'll have to try that.
Now, one of the things that we're very proud of is all our products are their heat levels are derived naturally. We do not use capsaicin. We do not use chili oils. We do not augment in any way, form, or matter. The chilies come to us because, as I mentioned, very specific, you know, very specific in terms of growing what we want, and so the chilies are hot on their own accord. Not
so there's
because,
an intrinsic heat
right.
associated mm. with the genre of chili that you provide.
Now, Mother Nature will throw us a curveball every once in a while, and so you know, a chili will come in and we'll think, well, that should be hotter than what it currently is. What's going on? And then you talk to your grower, and he says, well, the conditions were either wetter, or we didn't have this, or we didn't do that. So, yeah, a shorter growing period. We had to pick them sooner.
Well, it's like a grape, you know,
yeah,
of varietal. It'll have its own nuance, even though it's supposed to be a Pinot. There's still
right.
a certain inherent nuance to that.
Let's talk a little bit about, because you know, we had our first guest earlier. He started a business in 95, and he has that entrepreneurial startup innovation. What I really appreciate about you is running a family business. People need to understand it is different. First of all, being a woman-owned business owner. Second of all, adding the family dynamics and still yet being successful long-term. I think that sustainability is what our listeners really should learn, how you've captured that, because that is hard to do.
It is hard to do. It's challenging. You know, one of the things is running a small business is not for the faint of heart. You know, if you have to be able to take risks, you have to be able to really pull yourself up by the bootstraps sometimes and bask in the glories. They don't always come simultaneously. So anyway, but when you start running a family-owned business, it's a completely different dynamic. I'm very proud of the fact that I'm a board member for the Parker Center for Family Businesses that's affiliated with UNM's School of Management, Anderson. And just understanding a business owner's role and as it relates to building the business, succession planning, what happens next with future generations, how do you prepare future generations to be able to maintain the you know, momentum you've created.
And the authenticity,
right. So there are a lot of occasions where, you know, you're a business owner first and foremost, but for me as a mother, as a grandmother, as a wife, I don't bury those hats. You know, all of that comes into play every single day.
I think sustainability is underappreciated. There's a couple of examples. I won't mention names, but one of them is a running shop up on Paseo, Wyoming. Another one is that steakhouse. We all know where that was on Wantabo. In my view, and I tried talking to these guys, I told them, you got to refresh your audience. You got a core audience, they'll buy shoes from you or they'll buy a steak from you, but half these people here are 98 years old. No offense to 98-year-olds, but where's your youth? Where is your up-and-coming emerging audience to sustain you long-term? Well, the guy didn't want to hear it. Well, guess what? It's a mausoleum now. It closed down. But it's not about me. It's about sustainability. So how do you talk about refreshing your audience at Cervantes, for example?
Well, you know, one of the things is by having multi-generations in our business, it doesn't mean that my way is true and tried. I mean, it's true and tried for my generation. But my daughter, Marisol, who is younger, of course, has different ways to approach a problem or a challenge or a victory.
Or her audience.
And her audience, exactly. So with a multi-generational business, not only do we have my husband and I have our core customers, but we also are now creating a separate core customer base that's more in the age range of the second generation. And then as this continues to go through its process, You know, it's like mom, and now the kids are eating, and now their grandchildren are eating the products. So it does kind of build on itself.
Thank you for tuning in to ABQ Connect Now. I'm Jeffrey Candelari, along with
DJ Heckes.
We're with you every Saturday on 1050 KTBL. DJ, you want to talk about some of the ABQ Connect Now live events?
Yeah, just a reminder, remember, our next ABQ Connect live event is Thursday, February 25th. It's going to be an AM event from 8:30 in the morning till 10 at Bravo Italiano Restaurant at Uptown ABQ. To RSVP, you can call 604-9081. That's February 25th from 8:30 to 10 in the morning. Also, don't forget that Best Local Brand Contest. It expires February 26th. Over $4,000 worth of media prizes from local businesses to really help those businesses get awards. The application process, you can go online at exhib-it.com/B2B. These applications are judged by your local American Marketing Association. They pick the top three winners, three in commercial, three in nonprofit. The cool thing is then it goes to the People's Choice Award where you get to vote online. Really, if you've got that best local brand, be sure to enter.
We're one of the only live business radio programs that have live accompanying monthly events, networking events that
we're
provide
booked through August.
We are. Some of the upcoming venues include Bravo, the Canyon Club, Marcello's, Epicenter, ABQ ID. Maybe we can talk to Adrian. Maybe she'll be open to hosting one of our events next year. So we've got about 3 minutes, Adrian. So any concluding thoughts you want to discuss with our listeners about your business, some of the insights that you provide as an entrepreneur, any of that?
Well, you know, more than anything, I'd love to hear from them. You know, I am very accessible. Pick up the phone, give us a call. My office number is 505-254-9414. Also, drop us a line. Email. You can drop us a line at www.cervantessalsa.com. There's a contact page. Again, I'd love to hear from our customers how they're incorporating and using our products in their own families' lives. It's just not about me teaching people how to make enchiladas or how to make, a sauce for burritos or tamales. It's about understanding how our products are affecting their lives. Have they used it to maybe substitute a high salt, to substitute a high salt diet? Is this now, because there is a lot to be said about spicy foods that can help overcome some dietary issues.
And I think you said it very aptly, the emotional connection we have with food, particularly if we remember being a child and our grandmother making pozole or a tamale plate or some whatever it might be. In our case, it's tamales. In Louisiana, it might be gumbo. But there's an emotional attachment to the smell of your food, because smell is one of the strongest senses.
Correct.
It takes us back to, man, I remember my mom, my grandma, whatever. And you're really kind of returning to maybe a sense of innocence. I might be over dramatizing a little bit, but there's an emotional attachment to food, and that's why what you do is so unique, because of the authenticity that you demand when you provide, your products at Cervantes.
And really caring about being futuristic on understanding your audience and the health consciousness that we have. I really appreciate that as a consumer.
Well, fantastic.
So, DJ, you want to talk a little bit about the upcoming B2B?
Yes, thank you. Tuesday, April 26th, our ninth annual B2B event is going to be at the Sandia Resort and Casino from 5 to 8 p.m. Last year, we had about 700 attendees. We've moved the venue and the date up to get about 1,000 attendees. We have about 30 exhibit spaces left out of 96. We have great sponsors lined up. You can go to, again, exhib-it.com/B2B to learn more.
Very good. And thank you, Adrian Gonzalez. You are the president of Cervantes Food Products Incorporated. We have about 20 seconds. Any concluding thoughts?
Well, thank you, folks, for having me today. I really appreciate it. Allows me to share my story, and I love sharing my story, because if I can make a success out of a business, so can everyone else.
Thank you again, Albuquerque business community, for tuning in to ABQ Connect Now. We're with you every Saturday on 1050 KTBL. Good business, Albuquerque.
Did you know that only 50% of your marketing dollars actually work? That's right, just 50%. Which 50% is working for you? Are you tired of wasting money and not reaching the right target audience through your marketing dollars? Exhibit can help you get noticed through design and print of corporate branding, marketing one-sheets, brochures, and trade show displays. Marketing has changed, and the way to reach your target audience is changing. If you want to grow your business and work with a reputable and well-known company, be sure to call now and talk with one of our marketing and Exhibit experts, 828-0574. That's 828-0574. Or visit us on the web at exhib-it.com. Again, exhib-it.com. Exhibit, it's New Mexico's leading provider of marketing, design, and printing, and portable, modular, and custom trade show displays. Proud sponsor and co-host of KTBL 1050 AM ABQ Connect Now Business Talk Radio Show on Saturdays from 10 to 11 a.m.
Listen online at 1050talk.com. 1050 KTBL, Los Ranchos de Albuquerque.
A Cumulus Media Station.
Budget crunch time. Tweeting terrorism. I'm Michael Toscano. President Obama said...